this isn't a poem as such, it's a clutch of cliches. So it's a question of spotting the cliches. I don't think you're thinking that. In... In 2001, when Charlie Labrie gave the medical card to the over 70s, he neglected to dot the I's and cross the T's. Consequently, the doctors had the government over a barrel and were able to extract exorbitant fees for their services to the elderly. Recently, the cabinet has been tightening its belt and has blown that free steam clean out of the water. The old folk were sold down the river and ended up the creek without a paddle. But the feisty pensioners made a beeline for Leinster House and chanted, OAT, not RAT. One wrote on her placard, HSE equals high food elderly. They all agreed it was a budget to die for. It's true Mary Harney asked for the poison chalice, but who would want to fill her shoes in a situation that is spiralling out of control? As all hell was breaking loose outside the Doyle, Brian Cowan and his cohorts realised they would have to go back to the drawing board. It was obvious the leader had taken his eye off the ball. The unions too were up in arms. For some time now, it was evident that they and the government were no longer singing from the same hymn sheet. They wanted Fianna Fáil to go back to square one and learn joined up writing. Before retiring, Pat Rabbit had always looked for a level playing pitch. When Cowan announced the 1% levy, it was clear that he'd moved the goalposts. Union officials are usually good at thinking outside the box and can handle anything that might come out of left field. But this time, they recognised that they'd been thrown a curved ball. Cowan was shown the red card and had to eat his words. This is my last possibility for doing the sale of payment verse that I we tried one more time. Shall Pharaoh pale into insignificance? When his confidence was Phelan and Republicans were glum, McCain called Sarah Palin, though she's just a hockey mom. He went north up to Alaska, found a pit bull in disguise, pulled the rug out from Obama, caused one hell of a surprise. Known as Sarah Barracuda and a pageant queen to boot, she has rooted out corruption in her zeal to find the truth. But she may have made a blunder trying to fire her sister's ex. Now she's been investigated and may need to change her sex. Bristol's boyfriend is a redneck. They've been playing fast and loose. Now he's got the poor girl pregnant while her ma was shooting loose. Obama's run with terrorists, she says, and it's a crime. She diligently digs the dirt while Joe's biding his time. Just a heartbeat from the White House, she would fight the Russian bear, plunge the whole world into conflict, but she doesn't seem to care. Neanderthal Republicans are happy with that plan, but feel this handsome fishing gal should really be.
Thanks, Mary. Hopefully it is last time we have to read the quote. Not because of the poem, obviously, but because of the events that we have to be sure of. It's up to the mic. Oh, yeah, that call over there at the bar. Miriam Katie.
There was a recent print that saved your life. Following that planet so quietly, we see it for what you are today. Sandy quickly followed him. At the outskirts of the wood, McMahon, O'Toole, and the director and a few others were gathered around that burn. They had mob against the tree and they were jeering and spitting at them. Come on, Burn, you rotten coward. But I keep my hands behind me. Back, hit me, for Christ's sake, will you hit me? The tangle did not know what sound, just a whisper feeling the expression on his pale face. The vanity face quickly. Now prove to us that you're not a traitor, my son. Here are 3 shillings. Don't ask me where I got them from. Just trade in the nose and get 1 shilling. That's for all time to get down enough. But you've joined in our plans to get the enemy of our hunting. Get the bill in his mouth and you get 2 shillings. That's for your country, for Ireland, for all this bloody soft talk about peace and forgiveness. In other words, broadly the feet of treacherous friends. Betraying our kinsmen, our brothers, cousins and friends. Honouring their sacrifices, their love of God and country. And finally, get the food straight with 2 clean traitor's eyes and you get the flame lost. That's for you, McDonough. Prove to yourself that you're a loyal Irishman, a true patriot, and not a cowardly base cur like that treacherous one there. Quickly tell us blood warming. 3 shillings, you get Lily a new dress, a new doll, a ribbon for her hair. The lads are right, Burn is a dirty car. Look at them. That's where he thought her bloody words. Why didn't he let them have it? Shout at them. Swear and advise that he wasn't a traitor. Then he killed them if they didn't take back such a deadly, son of a chain. But no, the fool was silent. Eyes far away, allowing them to say and do what they wanted to him. I'm glad he was holding the 3 shillings up. The rest is shouting and waving their fists. Go on, McDonough, what are you waiting for? Get him in the eyes. 3 shillings for his damned, treacherous eyes. This is on track. The desperate black ray surged through his shaking body. A desire to kill, a desire to hurt and hurt and kill. The sister kicked him off the strike as he pulled to deliver the blow. His hands caught the coins, glistening silver in his son's way, with rounded and red tinges, dark red blood. Sissy met Matt's eyes, they were no longer his eyes, they were mysterious eyes, full of gentle compassion, deeply pain and deeply love.
Next up to the mic we have Niall Herriot.
West Cork haiku. It's a series of about 9 or 10 haikus which came to me from walks in the hills and woodlands and along the rivers of West Cork. Cobwebs in my head, lightly feathered up to that by a long hill walk. Nearly sat on grouse. Now that would be something to go to grouse about. Buried stone circle, ring of stone teeth. Peaks from peace. I sense your purpose. Dragonfly of droning, united in love, over water lily pads. Electric blue flash of kingfisher under ash and westwood willow. Life in the slow lane, oak stand there, going nowhere, is sure of its place. Smooth as molten silk, cascading through mossy rocks, feel the energy. Safe by its canopies, canopies if you are sure, its mushroom roulette. No need to speak truth, just drop our opinions, said a Zen master. I know I have to take that important. So, on this fine hot day, I may just weed this garden, or possibly not, Chine.
Thank you, Donald. And next up, we have Mr. Joe Sweeney.
So, this is a continuation of a set of letters that are written by a teacher to a principal, and she's a rather intellectual and it's a very rough school, and 2 instances just happened. One was that boy was on a ledge and just like, jump off, and the principal grabbed him by the arm and just managed to save him. And the other thing, there was a fire in the school and the principal's hair was burned off, so he had to get away just to fill in on the background. Dear principal, any news about John Evans? Remember him? The boy you teamed up with to do that daring dangle from the top window? Parents, suing yet? And speaking of legal matters, I still haven't heard how you got on with Forbes. Has he agreed to pay compensation for the damage done with the billiard balls to my car? Or were you reluctant to bring it up in case he used the knife he carries inside his jacket? But you knew about that, didn't you? Oh dear, I hope you didn't find out too late. You would do well, Principal, to be aware of what you are dealing with. Some of these pupils and their parents are pure Neanderthal. They don't concern themselves with legal niceties. And while we're on the subject, if I might give a word of caution at this juncture. I myself have made it a point of practice never to demand compensation from someone who is still actually holding the knife to my throat. I always think it is pure recklessness to start talking about taking legal action to someone who is on the point of taking immediate physical action against your person. Wouldn't you agree? Well, stand here because even at their right, a flock of pupils are heading towards my table, probably to ask me if they can go out for a smoke or I go out to the toilet. I needn't tell you that they don't stand a snowball's chance in hell. Best wishes, Mayor. Yes, be extra vigilant. There's a strong wind out today. It could play havoc with that wind. Dear Principal, thank you for your lengthy reply to my last letter. I suppose you have more time to write letters now in your fancy new office. The library is still black and smouldering, I notice, like the staff. When are you going to have it restored? I might have guessed that your own fort would be given priority. I notice you are venturing out of your new office even less than before, but that's hardly possible. I imagine the recent extraordinary alterations to your appearance have made you reluctant to show your face. One can understand this. You are waiting for the scars to heal, I suppose, and for the wig adhesives to settle down. But I do appreciate your suggestion that about not lending virus to pupils at all, but then they would not be writing. And so the scary question arises, what would they be doing? Can I leave this to your imagination? I was also relieved that there was no threat to the children of the staff from the strange oddball on the school grounds, because in fact the oddball was you. Frankly, a lot of us have known this for years anyway. I know, but seriously, best of luck with the new coiffure. It must be nice to have hair again. Well, it's probably not real hair. I mean, let's face it, Principal, let's call it stay the same. It's probably made from camel tails collected by Bedouin or baboon pluckings procured by African natives, or perhaps just the sweepings from cages at the local zoo. Let's not get carried away into thinking that you are now donning actual human hair. There was really so little about you that was human that this is just another step on an old road, isn't it? Nonetheless, the semblance of hair should put some pep in yourself. Who knows, maybe you'll soon be dangling two pupils at a time from the top window. Though I wouldn't be too ambitious if I were you. Remember, Samson? Yours, Biscuitly, Maeve, scholar and pedagogue extraordinaire.
Thank you, Joe. Next up we have Fiona. We have Fiona.
The creep crawled outwards along the door from the hinge as he left himself in downstairs, hands scratching off walls, searching for the gaps, the places where the darkness yawns on us when performative. The furniture is playing games with him, moving half an inch to the left and out of a tree as the disc cracks against the table edge, legs wooden, jolts across the wooden floor. The stairs is cloth carpet, first foot, then second pushed into the fibres, pressure resting in the air, close to silence of the guests. And amongst the footfalls I hear a heart beating, regular like an insect, trapped behind a heavy curtain. It's hard to be certain where the leaking things of floorboards lie, creaking intermittently in surprise, foot raised so quickly, guilty. It's the middle of the night, and you've woken everyone up again. Next.
Thank you, Emma. Next up we have Pirate Abdullah.
The seagulls roar the water clear, my sweat and breath are one.
The tree that gave me life is gone, extending to my sense of Vernia. I fight my way across the land, to Veranair, so that to you soon to there, when it is my gate again demand. A dreamless piece of round in land, to bruise is to upset the ground, blossom me to take city on me, the fuzz and thrill of me.
And next up we have Louise Buckley.
This is called My Song. That was my song to sing, the song that I used to help me breathe in. Give it back, please. That was my song to sing. We might have shared it for a while, but it was you who reached the contract of saying the words. That was my song to sing, the song I used to help me breathe in. Give it back, please. You sung it like you meant it, didn't you, Dave? Using the beats of your heart that you stage. There will be no alimony here. I'm taking it back now, writing for the secret, trying to change the record. After all, you only lent it to me, but she gave it freely, wrapping the strings of her heart. And this is called Little Off Boy and Little Off Girl. Little Off Boy and Little Off Girl got lost in the woods. They met a bear there that treated them better than they treated each other, and when they returned we'll call them George and Martha, always bringing up baby. Little Off Pig and Little Off Lamb built a house together and made it their home. Pig put on sheep clothes, lamb put on sheep. After some years the sun's stone house turned to sleep, and the wolf lay down before the fire. Little Off Boy and Little Off Girl got lost in a fair, where they saw Little of Bo Peep roasting her sheep, Booby Man Seven his ware of fierce teeth, and the girl of Mastic all shattered forlorn, shivering in her flame of blue. Little Off Boy and Little Off Girl moved into the castle but can't fight each other. Girl in top tower has pricked her finger, boy in corner broken his crown, run all the way down to drown in her frown. He fawns as he fawns, she yawns and she yawns, and muscles just can move to stop it.
Next we have a little bit of music. Alan, you're going to take a poem, were you, as well?
Huh?
Are you up for a poem this
yeah,
week?
Yeah, yeah.
We have Cullen Boylan. Cullen. Thank you.
How you doing? Can I do a quick song? Feels like a challenge. Trying to break a record. We're going to do a Tom Waits song, and it's called You'll Have to Wait Till Yesterday Is Here.
You want money in your pocket, put a top hat on your head, a hot meal on your table, or a blanket on your bed. Well, today's gray sky, tomorrow's tears, you'll have to wait till yesterday's here. I'm going to New York City, I'm leaving on a train. If you want to stay behind, will I come back again? Today's gray sky, tomorrow's tears, we'll have to wait until yesterday's here. And if you want to go where rainbows end, you'll have to say goodbye. Shining bright, and I want you to remember as I disappear tonight. Today's gray sky, tomorrow's tears, you'll have to wait until yesterday's tears. today's gray sky. Oh dear, you'll have to wait till yesterday.
We have up to the stage next, Mr. Alan Tilley.
Thank you, Paul. No singing after that one. Before Mary spoke, I was thinking stepping up to the plate and going forward, taking the moose by the horn, we should go on like that. There's a story called The Brotherhood of Wisdom, such as it is. Fairy tale. Once upon a time, in a kingdom in which there were no newspapers, lived a man who wished to acquire wisdom. He spent all of his time, from the breaking of the day to the making of the night, travelling around with a bearded wise one who wore sandals and spoke in cryptic monosyllables. He sat at their feet and drank deeply of the words which fell from their mouths. He read all the great manuscripts and great books of wisdom in the great libraries of that great kingdom. He was awarded high honours in the public examination for degrees and diplomas in wisdom, and wore the red robes of those who had successfully completed their studies in wisdom accordingly. He was rightly and justly and meekly proud of his achievements in wisdom studies. He attended wisdom conferences in many parts of the world and wrote wisdom monographs with neatly arranged footnotes which were always consistent in style and layout. Despite this, however, and despite the kind of kudos, at least, which he got at dinner parties and fancy receptions, when people asked him what his field of expertise was, and he would answer with an owlish shrug, well, wisdom, actually. Despite all this, he desperately wished to be accepted into the Brotherhood of Wisdom, so that he could spend the rest of his mortal days listening to those whose every thought sprang from the wellsprings of inspiration and whose every moment was founded in the well-fount of truth. He spent 40 days crossing the desert on a horse with no name, and it was good to be out in the rain, even if he only ate withered figs and drank tamarind piss. In the end, he reached the monastery of the Brotherhood of Wisdom somewhere between the mountains and the sea. He was allowed in and asked all the hard questions. And he had all the answers. He sang for them the psalms of the prophets and sighed the sayings of the seers and mumbled the mantras of the mysterious. He gave out bits of the silver apples of the moon and put before them chunks of the golden apples of the sun. He spoke of the ox of the seven combats and refuted the beasts of his anima mundi. All this and much more he knew in his head, because he had cultivated thereupon and had gained first-class honours in his examinations in the study of wisdom. Very well then, said the carbuncular abbot, it does appear that you do know it all, but there is yet one more test that you have to do, one more trial for you to essay before you are allowed into the Brotherhood of Wisdom. Come hither. And the man went to him very quickly indeed, and with great eagerness, and the abbot looked down into his throat. He said, but he thought and looked and produced the lighted reed which was always on hand on occasions like this. He plunged the reed down the man's throat, and when he withdrew it, it was utterly quenched. You failed, the abbot said roughly. Depart and remove and vanish from this place and out of my sight. But the man said a few more times, I have all the knowledge, I've read all the books, I've answered all the questions, I've supped at the feet of the wise, I've followed all the instructions, I've completed all my courses, gained all my degrees, diplomas and certificates with the highest of distinctions and merits and honours. Why then are you banishing me? Because you have no wit, said the abbot. And then the man picked up his bags and went away, and his heart was heavy and sore. And he crossed the bridge, and as he crossed the bridge it gave way, and he fell down into the rushing stream. And he drowned therein because he could not swim with the weight which he carried in his soul.
Thank you. Thank you, Alan. Thanks very much. And only in the night of this poem that I've been trying to thrash to death for 8 months, whatever, but it still hasn't gone in there. But I'm human, inspiring. I actually wrote a poem today. I'm writing more now, which is great, yeah. And it was something German was talking about earlier that actually made me think like that. Like the precursor to that was this poem that I wrote today, actually. I was, you know, sometimes what's going on in the world suddenly kind of accumulates and becomes overwhelming. You know, I had one of those moments today, and the word that came out of my mouth was Jesus, you know? It looks, I was saying this again, and for instance, you know, how did the religion of my childhood affect me? I'm not a religious person, nothing against it. Probably naturally tend towards the pagan sort of ways. Naturally, but I wrote this anyway today. It's called Imagining What Jesus Would Think. I realized I had a dual relationship with an image of him. I had feared and doubted him. I had loved and adored him. I imagined how we'd meet. I wouldn't mind a glass or two of red wine with him now, or in the future sometime. How different would he be to his unaging persona? How would he react to his impact since he left the world? Heaven has better things to do than worry about a paranoid little planet. Jesus would soon be fed up with us this time round. Ah, flying chair, Jesus. What do you think about? How to, first questions that come to mind, how to heal psychosis. 6, the human condition. I look into the vibrant yellow of stagnation. My own cousin awaits there to help me. It's Lou, she says. Lou's mighty, I reply. He could jump right out of mist, and I'd be him. His offer of light, an opiate, unseen, until I realize I've been seduced by raw power. Give me rather our gift, here, where I can shelter his copper eyes from the sharp future, and bathe his tongue in honeyed flames. And it's an amusing aftertaste. This river of kingly colour and ocular delight, this stream of purpurity, a vein aortic mix of spirit liquid, and even evolved vampires overdose on blends of rich, thick contradiction of unraveled breaths expired, and even as muses, pilgrim seasons, muses, each leave a trail of purple dripping from tongue and teeth, a new harvest of mystery, and even the starved poets sip the mountain manna, purple poem wine, dream drunk poets, pulse gentles, descends purply as seasons lift. Thank you, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you, Janet, Natalie, and Tony Desmond.